And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrow from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week we bring in our good friend Darren McFarland of Darren, Donick, and Chase, presented by Craneworks, serving the Southeast for over 30 years. Visit craneworks.com. DMAC, what's going on, my man?
Good morning, Robbie. How you doing?
I'm doing good. How was your weekend? What did you get into this weekend now that we were all cooped up in the house?
No, it's strange. I literally was just talking on the phone to a buddy of mine, and he lives up in Ohio, and he was just kind of telling me what's going on up there, and and I was just telling him how, this is supposed to be our hustle and bustle month, right? I mean, March is supposed to be crazy. I mean, it's the heaviest workload for the Predators in their entire regular season. You know, the SEC basketball tournament comes to town. NCAA tournament is going on. You know, we're getting baseball on our end cranked up. It's supposed to be crazy. And here we all sit. Well, yesterday, because finally, we're getting some decent. Yesterday was decent weather. It's nice. Sun was out, probably 60 degrees. But we couldn't take it anymore. We took him out. We found a ball field, and my wife and I just worked him out for a couple of hours. We just had to get out of the house, man. And then we took him. Then we went up to a basketball court at his school and let him shoot basketball for about an hour. So we had to do something to get out. We're so used to always being on the go, and especially this month. And it finally caught up to us yesterday. We're like, we can't do this anymore. Well, there's sun and it's kind of warm, so let's go. Let's get out. We got to go do something. Something isolated, just the three of us, but we got to go do something. So that's what we did. We went and hit baseball and played basketball for about 3 hours, and then came home and right back to it. So by the end of the week, it may get up in the 80s, which
I know
that would be nice.
That would be nice. Like, I almost forgot what the sun looked like. I'm glad that I was actually able to see it again yesterday. Darren, we were talking earlier in the show about Jadeveon Clowney. What should the Titans' interest level be in him, and how do you evaluate a guy like Jadeveon Clowney, who you look at the sack totals, and they're not great, but you also look at the film, you turn the game film on, and there's no question he can absolutely be a wreck at the line of scrimmage when he's on. What's kind of the number you're comfortable going to if you're the Titans in your pursuit of Jadeveon Clowney?
Well, it's a good question, Robbie. I don't know what the right number is. This is the way I evaluate the Jadeveon Clowney situation. I mean, we've all watched him since college. I mean, we all remember Clowney in college and what he's done with the pros at this point, because he's in the Titans division, and we all can make our own opinions. This is the way I look at it. We all have our own opinions, and I think most of us kind of have, I feel like most of us are on the same opinion. Really good player. When he wants to, seems like he, doesn't always engage, is hurt a lot, and is going to command a lot of money that most people feel like he's probably not worth it. I don't know if I'm misspeaking and speaking for a lot of people who feel differently. I kind of feel like the people that I talk to, that's how they feel, that's how I feel. But here's the deal. There's nobody that knows Clowney better than Mike Vrabel. And so, and this one, to me, you kind of have to say, okay, well, they know better than us, because the head coach has worked directly with him. He knows exactly what Clowney is every day. So none of us have been around him every day. We've watched him from afar, and I can tell you about what his resume looks like. I can tell you about what type of player he is through my eyes. But the head coach has been there with him. He's been there coaching him. He's seen him every day. He's been around him. He knows what his work ethic is. He knows what he brings to the table at the facility, in the meeting rooms, and out on the field. So in this one, I feel like we kind of have to just trust, if he's coming here, it's because Mike Vrabel said he's worth it. If he's not, then, you have to just trust them. Because I think, like I said, we all believe, we feel like the guy is special, but he's not always special. He, it's the same knock that Albert Haynesworth. And I always say, though, I know, because I was around Albert. I watched Albert Haynesworth's entire career in college and here. And Albert Haynesworth was special. And Albert Haynesworth had that knock, too. But let me just tell you, you can win a lot of football games when they do turn it on, because Albert Haynesworth, when special, when he wanted to, He won a lot of games for the Titans, for one, and two, was the most dominating player on that side of the ball. Okay, and I know because he didn't play all the time, and it frustrated the coaches, and at times it drove them crazy. But I'll tell you what, he was just that good. And Clowney can be that good. Is he worth the money that he's probably going to be asking for? Once again, I'd say most of us feel like he's not. But to me, I'm going to just refer to the Titans and say the head coach knows what he's all about better than any of us, and I'll just leave it at that.
No, I mean, I think that's a great point, and it's a good perspective, because this is just one of those situations where you have the advantage of, whether it's your head coach or, you know, one of your coordinators or whatever, you have someone on your staff who has been there multiple years, day after day, with the guy. So that's, you know, whatever the relationship is, the different ways he was used, how you know, I mean, you don't have to guess about how a guy like that will fit in your system because you've seen it. So I think that's a good point. I also feel like, Darren, I mean, if the Titans don't end up signing Jadeveon Clowney, he signs with the Seahawks or I guess someone else potentially, is there anything else out there before the draft that the Titans can do to, you know, to make us feel like they haven't gotten weaker? I mean, I think right now they're clearly weaker. I just don't know if there's another possible move out there that would move the needle at all.
I would say, to answer your question, Joe, no, there's not. There's not any. If you're looking for the feel-good signing other than Clowney to make everybody feel good, no, there is not one. Vic Beasley did not make anybody feel good, okay? He's a prove-it guy, and he's done it once, and yet he was more of an underachiever. And so can they hit again on a – can they go back-to-back years on hitting on a guy that comes in more on the bottom? I don't want to say rock bottom. That's not fair. Beasley's not coming in rock bottom. Ryan Tannehill, I don't want to say rock bottom. That's pretty darn low. But they're at the lower part of their careers because people have questions about filling the blanks. Ryan Tannehill was about staying healthy and this and that. And it worked. Like, can you really hit on that again? Can you expect to hit on that every year? I guess I don't blame them for trying again. I just know that it's really hard. It's really hard. Like, I don't think anybody should have real expectations that Vic Beasley's going to come in here and all of a sudden return to 15-sack guy. Just don't see it. So nobody really feels great about that. It's 1 year, so what do you have to lose? Although they paid him well, in my opinion. So, no, there isn't a guy out there. But here's the deal, Joe, and we all three of us know this. It's really not about winning the press conference. I don't know if they've ever been that team trying to win a press conference, at least under John Robinson. I think it's about what makes sense, right? I mean, we just talked about this last week. We had Dennis Kelly on the show. I remember that day vividly. Now, I was for the deal just for different reasons because I thought it was time to move on from DGB. It really had nothing to do with Dennis Kelly. Obviously, none of us knew anything about Dennis Kelly. But that didn't gain any attention, none. Other than a lot of people are like, how could you give up on DGB that quickly? I mean, still so young, right? I mean, how could you do that? He's a receiver, a young receiver. And why? Like, you can't give up on him. So I don't think John Robinson's really about winning press conferences or, you know, making everybody feel good. I think he's about doing the right thing. So to me, I get your point. I don't think anybody feels like they've gotten better. They certainly haven't gotten better. They're right now, with the trade of Jarrell Casey, you have question marks like, okay, they've taken a step back, they've cut Wake, although I don't know how much you really valued Wake. He was good when he was on the field, but they've taken a step back. They have to fill those voids. We don't know what's going to happen with Logan Ryan. So, you know, but I don't think John Robinson's got to do what makes sense, what is going to help this team take the next step. Because, oh, by the way, I don't know how you guys feel, and I know we've said this before, so I'm going to touch the stove, even though I feel like I could get burned. It's like, how many more times does this division have to tell the Titans, hey, it's your division, why don't you go win it? Like, how many more players need to leave the division, get traded away, retire, superstars, before the Titans stand up and take control of the division? Like, to me, the division, it's like, okay, now DeAndre Hopkins is gone. Hello? So they've traded Clowney. They've traded Hopkins, two of their best players. Watts always hurt. Jacksonville traded away Jalen Ramsey. I mean, right, I don't need to go through the list. Andrew Luck has retired. It's like, how many more things have to happen in this division with key players for the Titans to take control of this division? To me, it's there again for them to take. So I think it's obviously we know it's a huge year. Take control, get the division. But is Clowney is he the piece? I don't know. Joe, I really don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if they're willing to spend that kind of money. Do you spend that money on him or do you spend that money on Logan Ryan? Which one makes you better for 16 games? What do you guys think?
That's good. I don't know. I don't know either. Robbie, give us the
That's
answer.
Probably why they haven't done anything.
Yeah, I think it's a really, really tough question that John Robinson and the Titans have to answer. And look, we know they need a pass rusher. We know they need a guy that can get to the quarterback. My question, can Jadeveon Clowney do that consistently enough to justify the money that you're going to have to pay him to do that? And quite frankly, I don't know the answer to that question. And to me, if you're John Robinson, and this is just me, if you don't know the answer to that question, I would probably stay away from giving a guy $18, $19 million a year to try to find out.
Yeah, we also have to remember, Clowney is still very young, right?
He is.
He's in a prime of his career. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know what they're talking about over there. But in this one, I think there's two guys that we just brought up that are key. If, you know, one of them is to be on this roster next year, they'll be an important piece to their defense, Logan Ryan or Clowney. And the bottom line is they know more about those guys than we do. So I'm just going to trust that, to me, I feel like one of them's got to be on that roster for them to take the next step and keep moving forward momentum. And to me, I think they should know more than us on who's the right fit, who's worth it, and we'll just see what happens. But to me, you can't go over on both of them. I think they're just – one of them has to be on the roster, in my opinion.
Darren McFarland from Darren, Donick, and Chase has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Darren, thanks as always, man, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Yes, sir, guys. Have a great week.
You too. Darren McFarland brought to you each and every week by Crane Works, serving the Southeast for over 30 years. Visit craneworks.com. When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Darren had to say there and look ahead to the Titans this year. What moves do they have to make from now until the start of next season for us to feel like they're at least just as good, maybe even better than they were last season? That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. RockNashville.com is your community resource page brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though we're holed up in our own homes, we'll get through this, Nashville, like we do everything else together. Go to RockNashville.com to support local businesses who are supporting you. Welcome back into Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, an interesting decision the Titans have coming up, because I think there is some genuine interest in there for Jadeveon Clowney. Obviously, Titans fans have made that connection after you take Jarrell Casey's money off the book, sending him to Denver in a trade and getting back a 7th-round pick in return. You would expect there to be a corresponding move there of some sort. So I feel like it's still a decent chance that the Titans end up with Jadeveon Clowney. I just wonder what that number is that's too much, because you look at the sack totals, there's more to it than that. I realize that, but those count for something. I mean, the sack totals are not an irrelevant part of this discussion. And I do wonder how high John Robinson and the Titans would be willing to go for the services of Clowney.
Well, yeah. And I mean, if the actual, I think Corey Curtis earlier mentioned a Tacoma report. Actually, that was citing Sports Illustrated and reporting that the Seahawks were offering Clowney $18.5 million. Man, I mean, I have a hard time thinking the Titans would beat that. Now, is Clowney, does Clowney want out of there? Yeah, that's true. You got your state income tax. I mean, does Clowney want out of there? Does Clowney want to work with Mike Vrabel so much again that like he would take less than that? I mean, if that's truly what the Seahawks are offering, that's a big number. And I totally agree with everything everyone says about it's not just about sacks. He's young. He can impact the game a lot of ways. You know, Vrabel moved him around a lot. There's a lot to like about it. I mean, he would absolutely make them better, and it would be a big, big move to, you know, basically Casey out, Clowney in to try to make your defense better. It would be fascinating, and I think it could work. But the number, that's a big, big number. So it could also be, you know, could this end up being a Logan Ryan stays and then someone else, you know, on the mid-level that you would bring in?
Yeah.
You know, my guy John Glennon, and I hope Adam Vingan is listening and proud of me at theathletic.com. he had an interesting piece this weekend going over some of that other stuff too. He brought up, we've talked on this show, Robbie, about Derek Wolfe, you know, former Bronco.
Yeah.
He had seven sacks last year. He only played 12 games. Shelby Harris, a couple of Broncos, former Broncos, had six sacks for Shelby Harris. Actually, one that I hadn't thought of, it's a different kind of thing, but Damon Harrison, Harrison, former Giant, short-term Detroit Lions, 6'3", 350, just massive. You know, and definitely a run stuffer. I don't know how he fits into this particular defense. But, you know, I mean, you could go that route too, and that's more of a direct kind of trying to replace Casey. Although, again, like, this is not a Jarrell Casey guy who can also go on the outside and give you pass rush and move around and use his quickness. I mean, this is a straight-up, you know, run gap stuffer in Snacks Harrison. I mean, there's some other things like that out there that you could do. Seems like you want to do something else beyond just, you know, waiting for the draft. I mean, I think, you know, there are moves ahead. I don't know if they're going for the big one or a couple medium ones.
Yeah, because it's interesting because you free up the money from Jarrell Casey and everyone assumes that you're going after Clowney at that point. Well, let's say either, number one, you're not going after Clowney, or number two, you're just not able to come to an agreement and get to a number that makes you comfortable. Well, like, Titans fans at that point are going to, and whether this is fair or unfair, this is how they're going to view it. They're going to look back at this offseason, and they're going to say, okay, well, we've lost Jack Conklin. Dennis Kelly is the replacement to that. We traded away Jarrell Casey for essentially nothing to free up cap space and didn't get a big player back in return for that. So now you look at, you know, Tannehill, his long-term deal. Most people are fine with that. Derrick Henry on a franchise tag. I think a lot of people are uncomfortable with that, having Derrick Henry on the franchise tag. All of a sudden, you start to look at John Robinson, and not from like a job is in jeopardy or anything like that, but just like, hey, man, like this team on paper right now is pretty significantly worse than it was to end the season last year. I think that's the risk you take from a perception viewpoint. If you're not able to land Clowney or a big name like that with the money you freed up from Casey's cap space.
Right. Now, to Darren's point, the only risk that matters is what does it do on the field for you? And, you know, there's a draft. There is individual improvement, you know, that's part of this as well. Although, you know, the off season for this and probably every team is vastly altered now. But
yeah.
Yeah, it would be if nothing significant comes from here, then certainly I think Titans fans are going to be like, man, you know, I mean, rightfully so. Like, what's happening? This team has gotten weaker, and there hasn't been a corresponding move to make it stronger. So, we'll see. I mean, I have a hard time believing that this is it. The question is if you end up with a Derek Wolfe or something in that, you know, realm to go with Vic Beasley, you know, and you can, there's also Kamale Correa out there. You could bring him back. I mean, to me, that's a lot of prove it and unknown. And there's some prove it to a Clowney too, but it's still a guy who you know has big time ability and talent to impact games.
Yeah, and I think when you take a look, if they don't get Clowney, there's obviously the risk involved. You got Vic Beasley there. Let's assume that they do go out and add another piece, a kind of a lower tier piece on the pass rush front of things. I mean, all of a sudden, if Vic Beasley does work out, Jeffrey Simmons does take that next step, and you know the other guy you bring in, he works out too. I mean, you put in Harold Landry in that mix as well. All of a sudden, you got a pretty dangerous pass rush at that point. But that's a whole lot of what ifs going on there to justify. You know, it's hard for me to imagine every move of those working out at the same time. And if they do, I mean, the Titans are going to be really good on defense next year. No question about that. But it's a big risk to take, I think, if you're John Robinson.
Yeah, and look, no matter what happens from here, you really need Harold Landry to improve.
Yeah.
You know that there's talent there. There's no question about that. Harold Landry has the ability to be a productive pass rusher in this league for many years. But you need that guy to take a step, whether he's getting a lot more help from elsewhere in the front seven or isn't. You know, he's got to be better and produce at a more consistent level. You know, I mean, that's just – I mean, you moved up in the second round to get him, and that's a guy who has got to come through. So some of this is also about young players, you know, reaching their potential. I mean, we saw a guy like Jayon Brown go year after year after year, get better, 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 and to now where he's really a difference maker out there. And you need that year 2 to 3 bump for Landry too. I know that he worked hard after year one, you know, to add things and to diversify himself as a pass rusher. And, you know, whether he's getting a lot more help here or not, he's got to be better.
Yeah, no question about it. When we come back, Team Canada has announced they're not going to send their athletes to the Summer Olympics in Tokyo unless the Olympics get postponed. Will that be a domino effect? Will other nations follow suit? What do we make of the news by Team Canada yesterday? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, a story we were talking about earlier in the show, Team Canada announcing yesterday they will not be sending their athletes to compete in the 2020 Summer Olympics in Tokyo, and kind of the first nation to come out and say wholeheartedly, hey, we're not going unless this thing is postponed. I think you and I both agree that the most likely outcome of this is the Olympic Games are going to have to be moved. I mean, they're going to have to be canceled probably for this year and maybe pushed back to 2021 and to compete then. But certainly kind of an interesting decision by the Canadians yesterday, and I wonder if other teams either today or in this week here will follow suit and announce their intentions for the Summer Olympics as well.
Yeah, Canada flat out said not going. Australia all but said that, so that's two. Also, you know, the U.S. swimming and track teams have essentially, you know, they have put public pressure to postpone. And those are, you know, I mean, those are two of the biggest, you know, Summer Olympics sporting outfits of the, you know, swimming and running. So,
yeah.
I mean, everyone's on board. I don't even know if it's necessary. I mean, this is a 4 week. The IOC has said it needs 4 weeks to decide. Now, 4 weeks right now feels like 2 years. I know the last week has felt like a good year for a lot of us, you know. So they're going to go through this, and they're going to determine that they need to postpone it. There's a Associated Press story right now about this. You know, Japan's leaders have said, you know, the Prime Minister, if you can't hold it in a complete way, a decision of postponement would be unavoidable. And you know, Yoshiro Mori, he's the president organizing committee. You know, he said 4 weeks is quite a short time to consider all the necessary elements. It requires a tremendous amount of time. We have to hurry to go through this. I mean, they're going to go through everything, and that's what they're going to come up with. they could probably make it easier on everybody by saying, yes, we're going to postpone it, but they also have to figure out a lot of cost stuff here. I mean, you know, the good thing is you're going to be, you know, in a year, you should be fine to hold it. It's an every 4 year event. So you push it back 1 year, you have it in Tokyo in 21, and then you have your Winter Olympics the next year, and then you just on your normal schedule, 2024, I believe, is in Paris for the Summer Games. You know, you can be fine, but there's logistical headaches still. Like the Olympic Village, a lot of these things are temporary for the Olympics. So yeah, you've gone through all this work to get them ready for that short period of time, and now you just sort of put everything on pause. There's added cost to that. I mean, it's just like so – I mean, it's like most of society right now. It's a lot of added cost and not much coming in at this point until – you know, this pandemic can get under control.
And, you know, another part of this equation that I haven't really thought of until just now, because we've talked, you know, for the last week about the NBA and their decision to pause their season, and maybe they'll be able to resume play for this season at some point. Maybe they won't. But if you're the NBA and you make a decision to come back maybe in June at some point and your playoffs stretch into August, well, your NBA players who are typically a part of the Olympic experience in the Summer Games, you know, LeBron James, he is not going to be, you would assume, in a position available to play in the Olympics, because the Lakers are probably going to be in the NBA Finals at that point. I mean, the Olympics are scheduled to start on July the 24th, and if you're the NBA, you could still be playing playoff games at that point. That's kind of an interesting dynamic to this as well, is, you know, if you're USA Basketball, how do you kind of put a team together for the Olympics when you don't really know who's going to be there?
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, how can you do anything? I mean, it's just like with so many people involved in this, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how it's going to turn out. So that's a good point. I mean, the Olympics certainly likes its professional basketball players, you know, on those teams. I mean, that's one of the big events with the Summer Games. So, yeah, I mean, these athletes have to – I mean, this is where they really ramp up their training. I mean, this is – when you do something that's every 4 years, you know, there's like an every year thing where you get in game shape, you're a pro athlete, you have training camp or whatever. You know, for Olympic athletes on this four-year calendar, and in a lot of cases, it's the one time in their life that they're doing this. I mean, you know, you've got some people who have multiple Olympics who have long – careers in the particular sport, but for a lot of them it's a one-time shot, and these months leading into it is like a super training camp. It's like, you know, make it a four-year thing. I mean, you have to have the training is intense right now, and so now a lot of them can't even do that at all. And that's what Canada made clear in its statement. You know, a lot of its athletes are just like, they're unable to do anything, and that can be, for one thing, you know, performance is going to be severely impacted, but it could also be dangerous.
Yeah, and that's why I'm not sure that there's really a decision to make here for the Olympic Committee. I mean, if you're on the IOC and you're, you know, the four-week timeline that you're trying to toss out there in order to make a decision, like, you have athletes, number one, they're not being able to train to full capacity right now. So you've then got to wonder, like, even if they can compete, like, are you really getting the best and the maximum level of these athletes? And then are there certain competitive advantages that go along with it as well? I mean, look, the virus in the United States is much more widespread and much more of a factor right now than it is in some other countries. That's just the way that it is right now. So that's part of this discussion as well. So that's why I'm not sure there's really a decision to make here if you're the Olympic Committee. I think the decision is kind of being made for you, just like it was when the NBA. I mean, when Rudy Gobert tests positive for the coronavirus, your decision, if you're the NBA, is pretty much made for you at this point. I feel pretty similar about the Olympic Committee as well. Like, you're, at the end of the day, you can take the 4 weeks if you want to take it, but you're going to have to make a decision to move the games. I don't really think there's any way of getting around that at this point.
Yeah, exactly. The writing's on the wall. It's the IOC wants to, you know, I guess, dot the I's, cross the T's before making the official announcement, which is going to be, I mean, again, like 4 weeks is going to feel like an eternity if it sticks to that. I suspect it won't go that long because it's just what, like you said earlier, I mean, there's going to be more countries that say, we're just not going. So, you know, we're done. This probably is a domino effect. And then again, like, why are we waiting for you to tell us? I mean, you can say, look, they're postponed. We will come back with details. We have a lot of things to work out. But, yes, they're postponed, everyone. If they're going to stick with, like, give us 4 weeks to figure out, that's going to be a painful 4 weeks. It's just like everything with this pandemic right now. We're all waiting to see if there's, you know, a positive impact of the social distancing that we've been doing. Like, are we going to see, you know, the curve flattening? Are we going to hear that, okay, we've done some things that are going to help not overwhelm our health system as the cases inevitably grow as we test more people? You know, is this having a positive impact? Have we not done enough? I mean, we're already talking on this show, right, about football being interrupted. And of course we're going to speculate on all that stuff. In the meantime, we have to, every day you're just sitting and waiting for information that right now isn't available. And it's just like time to me through all this has just not, it has been warped, at least for me.
Yeah, no, I agree. And look, Joe, this is not a popular sentiment that I saw on social media, but I did see this floating around over the weekend, and I think it's important to address it here on the show as well. I mean, people are talking about, you know, we're still having positive cases every day, and it seems like this virus is spreading more rapidly than ever before in our country. And they're like, well, social distancing, obviously, we don't know yet. I mean, we've been doing this for, what, 11 days, 12 days, maybe not even that long in some parts of the country. You know, that's not long enough to really determine whether or not social distancing is working and to what degree it's working, because, you know, you can have this virus for like 2 weeks before you even really know if you're contagious or you're symptomatic or not. So
right.
I think there's an important distinction to draw there, where you may look around and, you know, in the moment it seems like the virus is really spreading, and being cooped up inside the house, I know, is annoying and people hate it. And you may be going stir crazy and you think this just isn't working, but I just don't think we have that data available to us yet to determine how well it's working and maybe what steps we need to take to help that along in the future.
Yeah. And a Canadian doctor, and again, listen to doctors, scientists, epidemiologists, you know, listen to people who know this stuff, made the point this weekend that what we're seeing now, well, again, one is testing. We haven't had any, so now we're starting to get testing. But, you know, what's happening now is the result of what people were doing 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago, we were doing nothing. We were life as usual. So what we've done in the last week, you know, we should have an indication of that shortly down the road, next week. Or, you know, I mean, you've got to give it, like you said, a couple weeks to take, I guess, you know, and keep getting, it's not going to be real time instant data on what we're doing. But look, it seems to me like most of this country is taking this seriously now and most people are trying to do the right thing. So hopefully that helps. We all hope so.
It has been cool to see, like, you know, musical artists and even sports figures, like, doing things online to help pass the time and to help entertain people. Like, there have been some NHL teams that have played, like, NHL 20 simulated version video games online. I know the MLS is doing some of that as well. It has been kind of interesting to see what creative ways people can come up with to still be entertained and to still get some of their content out there.
And there's going to be so much more to come. So keep.
Oh, yeah, buddy. There's a whole bunch of TikTok videos coming down the line.
Oh, and, you know, I think I've seen every possible 64 fill in the blank bracket, already. So those will
Joe,
run.
Joe, how
out.
Would you rate your TikTok skills? Are you an expert in that area?
I've never done a TikTok video. I will say I was impressed with what I saw from Sweet Willie D and C Mace on the TikTok. And if those guys
nice.
Can do it, then I feel like, you know, I'm in the roughly the same age range, so maybe I'm sure that'll happen at some point at my house. How about
Should
you? You a TikTok
a
guy?
Show? I have never been on TikTok one time in my life, and I'm a 27-year-old man. Maybe I need to fix that this week. Should we set a show goal for both of us to make a TikTok video of some sort before the week is over?
Can we let's make it like
leave that up to you.
Can we make it like a let's say like a month? Like, again, time is time is warped in my mind. So, I mean, I think like in a month we'll still – by then we'll be desperate enough to want to do it.
That's fine. We can go with a month. I'm willing to do that because, number one, I've got to learn what in the world's going on TikTok. So maybe,
yeah,
maybe I'll use this week to educate myself on that.
All right, I'll do the same.
There you go.
Good plan.
When we come back – I think it's a great plan. When we come back, is Derrick Henry getting hosed by the Titans? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Marquise Munson coming to you live on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, we were talking earlier in the show about Derrick Henry. Is he getting hosed by the Titans on this franchise tag contract that he's currently under? Look, we all assume the Titans and John Robinson are working to give Derrick Henry a longer-term deal that will keep him around here for the foreseeable future. But there is still that possibility that this is just the way the Titans are going to operate, and this is how they view the running back position, and they're going to go from here and operate under this 1 year with Derrick Henry. What's kind of your feelings on basically the way Derrick Henry should feel about this contract in his negotiations with the Titans as they move forward here?
Well, I mean, I hesitate to say someone making 10 mil is getting hosed, but I do think that there are some external factors that have nothing to do with Derrick Henry that are conspiring to limit him right now. And a lot of that is just other running backs who recently have signed big deals, and for various reasons, most of them health related to some extent, you know, those deals have gone bad. And so there's this big, oh, don't sign a running back to a deal thing out there. You know, and that, I mean, that's easy to cite. Also, I think that Derrick Henry, because he's not like a lot of the top backs in the NFL right now in terms of, you know, the versatility out of the backfield. Certainly, he's a guy, if you can get the ball in his hands in any way, he's a weapon, but he's not the guy out there, you know, running routes and going to catch 50 passes in a year. You know, it's just never going to be him. So those two things conspire to hurt him. I don't think it's fair. I'm going to stick with that. And, hey, he may, you know, get hurt and that'll be that. But right now he's young and healthy and durable and one of the best weapons in the NFL, and regardless of position. And that's the problem. His position is really hurting him right now, and I think he should be judged beyond that. But I'm also not the one operating under a salary cap. So it'll be, you know, I don't know if the Titans are serious about trying to really make this a long-term thing, or if they just really like the idea of go with the tag and see what happens in that year. But if you're Derrick Henry, you know you could blow your knee in that year or whatever and have some sort of disastrous injury, and that's it, and you don't have the security of a deal. And frankly, if Derrick Henry's playing on a one-year deal, take away all the risk and the fact that you – are worried about signing a running back to a long-term deal. In that 1 year, you, like, pay him 15 then, you know? Go beyond the tag.
Yeah.
Just do a 1 year, like, $15 million deal just to make the feelings a little bit better.
I do wonder, and we talked about this a little bit earlier in the show, but, like, at what point, if you're, you know, one of these highly touted running backs coming up through high school – or you get into college, do you look at what's happening in the NFL and how that position specifically is being looked at around the league and think to yourself, would I be better off switching positions? Like, you know, I think about a guy like Eddie George, who was here with the Titans. He was obviously the bell cow running back for a long time. I mean, he's a borderline Hall of Famer running back, in my opinion. And I wonder, like, if Eddie George was coming up now, would he still want to play the running back position? Because he's a guy, I mean, you look at his body, the way he's built, the way he can run, like, you know, maybe a tight end. Like, I don't know. But, like, I wonder at what point, if you're one of these high school running backs or one of these running backs at the highest levels in college football, do you think, would I be better off playing a different position to extend the longevity of my career and maybe even the earning potential of your career?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I think certainly high school offenses, the way they've changed, I think there are probably guys who are playing receiver who maybe would have been running backs, you know, guys who are catching passes who would have been running the ball more. I'm glad you brought up Eddie George, because Eddie George is someone I've been thinking about in terms of writing something about this Derrick Henry situation. You know, Eddie George, 6'3", 240. I mean, Eddie George is, I still think now today, would be a perfect running back. I mean, that's what he is. He's built to be a running back, right? I hear what you're saying on would today's game change the mind of someone like that. Eddie George, by the way, you know, he played 9 seasons in this league. He went for 1,000 in 2003, his 8th season. So you're talking about, at that point, 7 of 8 seasons, he was over 1,000 yards. So played well beyond this window of a running back. Also at a time when there was all kinds of full contact in practice, at a time when concussions were barely given any regard in the NFL, at a time when defenses were much more built to stop running games. And Eddie George was just fine and played, you know, 9 good seasons. You know, his last season with Dallas, I mean, he played 8 games and he was out, but 8 really strong seasons as a running back in a time when it was harder to be a running back with longevity in the NFL, given all those factors that have changed in the favor of running backs. So he's a good example of, you know, it's not like he and Derrick Henry are the exact same guy, but they are similar body type. Yeah. And Eddie George plowed through tougher circumstances to do 8 seasons. So, again, if you're going to take David Johnson and Todd Gurley and all those guys and hold them against Derrick Henry, well, you should take some other guys who actually have gone the other way. I mean, this isn't the entirety of running back life in the NFL. It's just that it's been a bad streak of luck. And, again, I think certainly in terms of perception of the position right now, it hurts Derrick Henry.
Joe, quickly, as we wrap up here, if you're a Titans fan and you're viewing this Derrick Henry situation and hoping that a long-term deal gets done rather than just the franchise tag, at what point do you become concerned that maybe a long-term deal isn't on the horizon as the offseason progresses here?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think the deadline is July 15th. Is that right? I think that's right.
It is.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's – the thing is, it's hard to answer that too because everything's so out of whack right now.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole calendar is messed up and teams have to make up for things that they normally would do with different things. So I don't know. I guess, you know, that's something that certainly could be a couple months down the road or whenever, you know. So I don't know. That's a good question. It's a tough one for me to answer. You know, I mean, I think every day that goes by without it, you can think about it and wonder, huh, maybe that's just not happening.
Yeah. Certainly going to be interesting to monitor with Derrick Henry and the Titans as we move forward. That's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. Joe, thanks so much for joining me today. Appreciate you.
All right, buddy. Good show. Good job.
Absolutely. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 o'clock here on 102.5 The Game. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next. Stay tuned for them. We'll see y'all tomorrow at 6 a.m.